So I would like to do innovative, groundbreaking work on this whiteness. That is not my idea, but that I have inherited. And this service is, in case you haven't figured it out yet, what that is about. So I want to start by defining what it is we're looking to dismantle. White supremacy culture is like the water in a fish tank. It's simply everything that is around us. At some point in our lives, we learn that there are other ways of being. That is just part of human development. And our human tendency is often to think that ours is better than theirs. My way of being is probably the best there is, right? When we're white, thinking that ours is better is supported by our social and political systems that have been built through that same frame through which we're looking. We learn that our way is the right way and the best way when we are white, and simply put, that is what white supremacy culture is. It's not limited to the things we immediately think of when we hear the term, things like lynchings and hate crimes and neo-Nazis and racial slurs. Those things are just the most overt manifestations of it. White supremacy culture is also the insidious teaching and internalization that white is right. On her website, White Supremacy Culture, Tema Okun says, it teaches us that blackness is not only valueless, but also dangerous and threatening. It teaches us that indigenous people and communities no longer exist, or if they do, they are to be exoticized and romanticized or culturally appropriated as we continue to violate treaties, land rights, and humanity. It teaches us that people south of the border are illegal. It teaches us that Arabs are Muslim and that Muslim is terrorist. It teaches us that people of Chinese and Japanese descent are both indistinguishable and threatening as the reason for COVID. It pits other races and racial groups against each other while always defining them as inferior to the white group. Green is on.
Green is on. Working? Good. This is going to be hard for me, but it's important. My passion for social justice has been part of me since childhood. As a young adult, I was a proponent of zero population growth with plans to adopt children. When Mike and I started talking about having a family, adoption was part of that plan. My passion for racial justice led to our adoption of two Black children. As a mother of two Black boys, I saw the transformation as they grew from cute novelties to potential threats by some people in our community. These were good people for the most part. They didn't have a lot of experience with Black people, and some of them didn't know how to act. I took on the responsibility of teaching people about the reality of living as a Black child in a white town. Most people were very responsive to learning about a whole reality that they didn't know existed. That reality included experiences that were traumatic and damaging to my children. They included things like having the teacher and/or students look at them as the only Black person in the room when something referring to Black people was mentioned. It wasn't all of them, or all of the time. But imagine being 7 or 8 years old, and even once, having most of the people in a room look at you when slavery is mentioned. That was one of the small, everyday microaggressions that we lived with. They were followed in stores from a young age. If there was a playground incident, they were visible. They were the first to be called out. It wasn't malicious. It was just obvious. They didn't even have to be part of the situation. This went further when the police came stopping at our house, asking where my sons were when specific events happened. They told me they were asking parents in the neighborhood for information. I talked to other parents. They were appalled. This had never happened to them. I didn't join a UU fellowship until after my sons were grown, and I joined about the time the systemic racism became apparent. I started to search within myself and learn within my UU family in New Jersey about the problems within the UUA. I was a leader when we started looking at what we could do to change our fellowship. I moved to Sheboygan and attended a UU fellowship in Manitowoc. We adopted the eighth principle and organized a series of study groups to learn about the problem, including the 8-week Me and White Supremacy program. Now in Madison, I'm part of the Justified Anger Black History for a New Day course, and I'm continuing to learn about areas of ignorance within myself. We all have room to improve. I strongly believe in journeying towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism, also known as the eighth principle. Thank you.
Ooh. Thank you, Jeanette. So, like many of the institutions in this nation, Unitarian Universalism was built within the frame of white supremacy culture. That means there are lots of ways we've signed on to whiteness as we've developed our structure and our processes and our statements. So when the Unitarians and the Universalists consolidated in 1961, the new Unitarian Universalist Association adopted a set of principles. One, to strengthen one another in a free and disciplined search for truth as the foundation of our religious fellowship. Two, to cherish and spread the universal truths taught by the great prophets and teachers of humanity in every age and tradition, immemorially summarized in the Judeo-Christian heritage as love to God and love to man. Three, to affirm, defend, and promote the supreme worth of every human personality, the dignity of man, and the use of the democratic method in human relationships. Four, to implement our vision of one world, by striving for a world community founded on ideals of brotherhood, justice, and peace. Five, to serve the needs of member churches and fellowships, to organize new churches and fellowships, and to extend and strengthen liberal religion. And six, to encourage cooperation with men of goodwill in every land. This statement of principles included a wider range of theological possibilities than just the Christianity of the historical Unitarians and Universalists. It centered the human experience, and it used gendered male language. It assumed the existence of universal truths, and it was framed in the language of unity rather than inclusion. So, championed by women who didn't see themselves in this statement, the principles were rewritten in 1985. That rewrite is the seven principles as we know them. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Fast forward to today. There is work happening now to explicitly include a focus in the principles on anti-racism and multiculturalism. Paula Cole Jones, the Director of Racial and Social Justice for the Central East Regional Group, developed an understanding that the seven principles and the beloved community are two different paradigms in UU circles. She realized that a person can believe they're being a good UU and follow the seven principles without thinking about or dealing with racism and other oppressions at the systemic level. And that's totally possible. She realized that we needed an eighth principle to correct this and worked with the organization called Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism to draft one. It reads like this: We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote journeying towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. So the principle incorporates the idea of beloved community, but not, as the Black Lives of UU website says, not the widely held understanding of the beloved community as some affectionate, loving community. Beloved community is a term first coined in the early days of the 20th century by philosopher, theologian Hosea Royce, and then gained popularity through the prophetic work of Martin Luther King Jr. and the Civil Rights Movement. Beloved community happens when people of diverse racial, ethnic, educational, class, gender, sexual orientation, backgrounds, and identities come together in an interdependent relationship of love and mutual respect and care that seeks to realize justice within the community and the broader world. Look up BLUU.com to see that in print. Or .org, I'm not sure which. The eighth principle incorporates an explicit focus on actively dismantling racism and other oppressions through both personal and institutional work. It's being driven by Black, Indigenous, and people of color who don't see themselves in the current principles, just like the 1985 rewrite of the principles was driven by the women who didn't see themselves there. The two organizations for people of color in the UUA, which are Diverse Revolutionary Unitarian Universalist Multicultural Ministries, or DRUM, and Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism, or BLUE, they have endorsed the eighth principle, and they've been encouraging congregations to adopt it. And 214 have so far. 214 congregations have gone through a process of diving deeply into our history, learning about the good work we have already done in our journey toward wholeness and inclusion, and why we're being called to take this specific step. Exploring and committing to accountability to UUs of color, and doing the internal work of interrogating white supremacy culture that we've inherited and internalized.
Hey everyone, my name is Eva Wingren. I use she, her, hers pronouns, and I'm going to tell you today about why I am working with the eighth principle group here at REAB. I started my anti-racism journey with a bunch of other white people in 2015. We saw Black men and boys like Mike Brown, Trayvon Martin, and particularly in my home community of Baltimore, Freddie Gray, killed by police. We saw Black Lives Matter grow from a slogan to a movement, and we heard the call from Black activists to go organize our own communities because they couldn't win without us. The history of racism was never the surprising part to me. I worked in affordable housing, where the legacy of racism is obvious and part of daily conversation. The part that was new for me was tactics. My advocacy job was nonpartisan and apolitical. Every day, I brought facts and figures to my meetings on the Hill, hoping that this time politicians would do the right thing, even the financially sensible thing, and invest in closing the racial wealth gap. Of course, it doesn't work like that. Power concedes nothing without a demand. These meetings were full of young, white, class-privileged folks like me, but policymakers weren't often hearing directly from folks who struggled to find affordable housing. Black Lives Matter showed me the power of mass movements to push for change rather than asking nicely. Moreover, I hadn't felt a particular personal connection to any issue and had just blandly wanted to help, air quotes. The idea that so many political issues were fundamentally shaped by our legacy of racism, that they were all actually interconnected, and that in this way racism affected white folks too, was revolutionary for me. The other thing that shifted for me in 2015 was the emphasis on organizing other white people. Previously, the measure of how good a white person was when it came to race was how many black friends they had. Coming from the very white Pacific Northwest and largely having white person hobbies, I didn't have any black friends. I must admit that when it comes to something like the Eighth Principle, that is about shifting organizational culture to one that feels like home for folks from diverse backgrounds, I still feel like I don't have much to offer. But the idea that I can be a work in progress in terms of my own ability to connect interpersonally across difference and still take action towards political progress on my anti-racist values was a game changer. One hobby that did offer some connections to Black people and African-American culture was blues dancing. The blues musical genre looks unflinchingly at the Black working class experience in all its struggle and joy. It is political in the same way that everything is political, while also being a lot of fun. Some of the most enduring relationships of my life come from that space. Although the blues dance community I was part of was very white, we knew we needed to respect its identity as a Black dance and support Black teachers, musicians, and fellow dancers. Whenever I think of why I do anti-racism work, I come back to how much blues has given me, and it inspires me to keep going. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Randy Coloni. I use he, him pronouns. In my effort to live my values, I personally need the energy and guidance of the UU principles to keep me focused. The principles, as they guide and tie into our worship services and congressional activities, help give me a motivational push to do the work that needs to be done to create the fair and equitable world I want to support. I'm on the Eighth Principle team because I personally need to be guided and pushed to deal with the injustice and inequity caused by the racism and a history of white supremacy. I find it just too easy for me not to deal with it or to get by with doing a little now and then when it's convenient. I need to be reminded as I participate in UU worship activities to notice and take action to address the economic and opportunity disadvantage being suffered by the marginalized people around me. As a white person, I don't have to really see the poverty in people's struggles. I'm comfortably insulated from it, and I hate to admit how easily it can be tolerated like a kind of background noise if I don't get help from my spiritual base to be aware. That's why I think working on implementing the Eighth Principle in our congregation is important work for me to do.
Thank you.